you all for attending, and our apologies, the video at my end is not working. So you can imagine me sitting in my office talking to you, very happy to be here today. So thank you very much. And I wanted to start out and just kind of highlight the three main points that we're going to talk about during this webinar today. So one, I want to talk to you about how and then why stress impacts hematopoietic stem cell transplantation outcomes, or HCT. I will then move into a possible intervention that we have been working on and provide you some of that data. And then I will finish with talking about how transplantation treatments, or a newer drug that is on the horizon here, can affect central nervous system functioning. So I would like to just kind of start with this rather bold statement that increased stress leads to cancer progression. Now, there are some who may debate this point, but there really is a very solid, robust body of literature now that is showing us at very specific molecular and genetic levels that this is indeed the case. And with regard to transplantation, kind of a startling statistic is that transplant patients of lower socioeconomic status, or those in poverty, have about a 20% increased risk of death after transplant. And to understand why, we can think about the field of, again, psychoneuroimmunology, or PNI. It helps us get at sort of what mechanisms are going on that might help to understand this. So PNI is really kind of a constellation of several fields, but it involves understanding how the central nervous system and the brain impact immune function and lead to basically different health outcomes. So something that we as CL psychiatrists, you know, are incorporating all the time as we take care of medically ill patients and psychiatric comorbidities. And I will say that transplantation is probably really one of the more pertinent disease states to think about in this context. So first, the patients are facing you know, significant transplant-related stressors, including facing a life-threatening illness and then being subjected to prolonged periods of social and physical isolation. Number two, they have one of the most highly compromised immune systems of any patients we see. And number three, the bone marrow is actually innervated by the central nervous system, kind of setting up the hardwiring in place for these relationships to be important. So I want to kind of just highlight two pathways here as we get started in background. So one, cancer affects the brain and its function. We think about that, that's kind of one of the tenets in biological psychiatry, the function of cancer itself, as well as its treatments, as well as the psychological stress response to cancer and having cancer, alters all sorts of pathways that kind of stem largely from inflammation. That leads to modulation of monoamines and many of the things that our psychiatric drugs target, resulting really at a biological level in alterations in behavior such as depression, fatigue, anxiety, impaired sleep, all the things that we see in, for example, a psycho-oncology practice. But a little bit less well understood and less accepted in the field broadly is the idea that the brain also influences cancer and cancer progression. And you heard more about this if you were at the ACLP meeting last year when Dr. Steve Cole gave our opening plenary TED talk. And you will see some of our subsequent work together throughout this talk. But the idea here is that activation of the central nervous system through processing of stressors results in activation of the sympathetic nervous system as well as the HPA axis. And the resulting catecholamines get down to the level of the tumor microenvironment, sort of allowing a permissive environment at a very molecular level for that tumor to grow and spread. And there is more about that in the reference review here if you're interested. So with that in mind, we published a sort of model, a biobehavioral model of how we might think about these relationships within the setting of transplantation, with the idea of being able to test these and setting kind of a stage for future research. And so we identified many psychosocial factors that we see commonly as CL psychiatrists, so depression, anxiety, the impact of low SES, and I highlighted some of the pathways that we know they affect or are related to, including inflammation, catecholamines, impaired cellular immune function, and then talked about some of the potentially intermediary pathways that are pertinent to transplant and could lead to these adverse outcomes. So things like graft versus host disease, immune recovery, impaired immune function, and then how that could relate to increased morbidity and mortality. So in order to test this idea, and I'm going to talk here about how stress can impact the outcomes and the how and why, we chose to look at socioeconomic status or low SES as sort of a marker. And I can talk more about that later if people are interested about why. And the mechanism we chose to look at was altered gene expression patterning. And this gives us kind of the most robust and broad scope of information that allows us to understand sort of all of these pathways that I've been mentioning. In particular, we looked at, rather than just altered gene transcription, we kind of hypothesized that this particular pathway that Dr. Cole, as the director of a social genomics laboratory at UCLA, has identified as a conserved transcriptional response to adversity. So this is a CTRA gene expression profile. And this occurs in circulating immune cells in these peripheral blood mononuclear cells that demonstrate sort of a systematic shift in basal gene expression in cells and organisms that are under conditions of chronic stress, threat, or uncertainty. So like low SES, isolation, loneliness, et cetera. And it's composed primarily of these 53 genes, a preponderance of which are related to high inflammation. And very importantly, and I'll continue to talk about this, this is regulated by the beta adrenergic system. So again, kind of the fight or flight response in the catecholamines that get down to the level of the tumor microenvironment, as I mentioned. So we tested that and to see whether SES was related to the CTRA profile. And then we published the findings a couple years ago where we saw that indeed low SES was associated with increased CTRA gene expression in this particular transplant population who all had AML and underwent allogeneic transplantation. But even more provocative is really that the CTRA gene expression in and of itself, so this more or less biomarker of a stress response, was significantly predictive of increased relapse and decreased leukemia-free survival in this cohort. So I think these data were kind of interesting in this way that the journal actually solicited and invited commentary from two bone marrow transplant specialists. And I'm going to highlight a few things that they said because I think that they kind of summarize key points here better than I really could. So they say that, and I quote, "These data might get to the core of an untapped area in cancer therapeutics, understanding how to manage chronic stress to positively influence outcomes." And they go on to say that we could potentially use this CTRA profile as a stress biomarker, which could in turn be incorporated into pre-transplant disease risk stratification. So again, really driving home kind of that translational, clinically applicable point of some of these research findings. So I've just kind of told you about how stress impacts transplant outcomes at sort of a physiologic level. And I'm going to move now into the second part where we talk about a possible intervention that we've done some work on. And I will start by saying that in this publication that I just told you about and the invited commentary, I think the reviewers did a nice job also of saying, of calling out something that we discussed briefly, that the use of beta adrenergic antagonists or beta blockers could actually be of potential benefit in these individuals with altered CTRA patterning, and that it might be monitored over time to sort of assess treatment responses. And so I'd like to move into that and talk a little bit more about this idea of beta blockers in the setting of cancer. There's actually a fairly robust literature of retrospective pharmacoepidemiologic data in a whole variety of cancers, really the whole spectrum, solid, hematologic, that identify that when individuals are diagnosed with cancer, if they happen to be on a beta blocker at that time of diagnosis, turns out the progression of their disease is less. And sort of based upon this, you know, a decade and more of literature in that area, there's also very interesting and strong preclinical data, which I'm sharing for you on the screen now, that when you test this in a mouse model and you give a mouse breast cancer and then you stress that mouse, you can see the spread of that primary tumor throughout the mouse's body. It induces metastases. And interestingly, when you stress that same mouse and with breast cancer, you can give propranolol and you can completely mitigate that adverse response of stress on cancer progression. I will say this example is in breast cancer. You see almost the same pictures actually in leukemia in terms of bone marrow spread. So it was in this setting that the National Cancer Institute some years ago put forth an RFP calling for sort of early pilot studies, small scale studies that could start to test this idea of being able to prospectively use a beta blocker in the setting of cancer to improve cancer outcomes. So we were fortunate to be awarded one of these, myself as a PI, to look at the implications of using propranolol in the setting of bone marrow transplantation. And so what we did briefly was recruit a cohort of 25 patients with multiple myeloma who were undergoing their first autologous transplantation. So we recruited them, we drew their blood at three time points because we hypothesized that we could budge that CTRA expression with propranolol. So essentially decreasing the stress biomarker through this drug and this biomarker that we had shown to be related to worse outcomes after transplant. We started the drug a week before the transplant at 20 milligrams BID, titrated up to 40 BID, which we kept them at for a month after transplant, and then took their blood again and tapered them off. And that was our study. And at day zero, they got their auto transplant for myeloma. And I will tell you what we found during that. So our first aim was really to see whether this was feasible, because it had not been tried to ever do that and give patients like this that type of drug. And what we found was that indeed it was feasible. We were able to recruit a cohort to execute the study successfully. The patients remained on propranolol. They adhered to the medication. We had to take one or two off for, just one for hypotension, and we had no serious adverse events, but actually we seemed to prevent serious adverse events in the control group, as about 6 out of 12 of those had the serious adverse event of hypertension. So the conclusion was that it was feasible to do this. Secondly, our second aim was to see whether we could decrease that CTRA profile, again, that is involved in beta adrenergic signaling. And indeed, we were able to significantly reduce expression of that sort of stress biomarker, the CTRA profile, in the individuals in this study. Next, we kind of early, while we weren't powered to do that in this particular study, we kind of took a peek at some of the earlier clinical outcomes. And we saw that actually engraftment, while did not fully reach a statistically significant level, it was clinically meaningful. We were able to move engraftment rates for neutrophils and platelets several days sooner in the group that received propranolol, and they actually sustained far fewer infections. So 1 versus about 6 infections in the group that was on propranolol. So those are parameters actually that result in, you know, earlier discharge. And so we think that this data is also meaningful in this drug could actually be resulting in things that result in sooner discharge from the hospital, and of course save costs, increase outcomes, and better safety. Again, this was a pilot feasibility study, so certainly ongoing future studies are needed and empowered to look at clinical outcomes in this particular, within this particular setting. Oh, and I should say before we move on that while this is altering the gene expression through a pharmacologic intervention, there is work in the realm of behavioral interventions, particularly with Mike Antoni at University of Miami, that is looking at the ability to use cognitive behavioral stress management, and they have had some success with that as well. So there are patient options and possibilities for what this could look like even when combined. So more on that. So I've now told you about the impact of stress on biology and transplant outcomes first, and followed by one possible intervention to mitigate some of these stress effects on biology and transplant outcomes. And I'd like to turn now and say a little bit about some work we've done looking at more of a newer drug as an example of how transplantation treatments actually affect CNS functioning. So that reverse where kind of cancer and its treatments are affecting brain functioning. And I'd like to introduce tocilizumab. So some of you may have heard of this. It is an IL-6, interleukin-6 receptor antagonist. It was approved only for rheumatoid arthritis. And the interesting thing about it is it blocks IL-6. And IL-6 is sort of the most candidate cytokine that we see implicated in sickness symptoms and depression. And the biological psychiatry literature is kind of published on that extensively. We also see IL-6 increased in the setting of graft versus host disease, and we see it associated with adverse quality of life symptoms in individuals with graft versus host disease, as well as not. And here, the transplanters at our institution were doing a study looking at TOSI for its ability to prevent the development of acute graft versus host disease after transplantation. And we were interested to see whether this would be a setting whereby TOSI would mitigate some of the depression and other quality of life related symptoms. So in essence, we did a kind of correlative ancillary study where we evaluated TOSI for its ability to prevent depression, as well as anxiety, fatigue, sleep, and pain, as compared to individuals who did not receive this drug. And we did collect some biomarker data as well, and we're in the process of analyzing that, but I will present to you here some of our quality of life data. So interestingly, we found that TOSI did have a significant impact on patient-reported outcomes after transplant, namely our primary outcome being depression at that date, at about 1 month following transplant, which is about how long TOSI stays in the system. And but very interestingly, we found that it had the exact opposite effect of what we had hypothesized. And we hypothesized this based, again, on a large body of meta-analytic literature suggesting that anti-cytokine therapy would remediate depressive symptoms. When we continued to look at the other patient-reported outcomes, we saw the same pattern. So those on TOSI experienced greater anxiety at all time points following transplant. They also experienced significantly more pain and worse sleep at all times following transplantation. So some of our conclusions from this, I think there's really twofold ways to think about this. So one, from a biological psychiatry perspective. As I said, this is kind of prevailing gestalt in the field that IL-6 leads to worse depression, and here we blocked it and we saw actually even more severe depression. So this data kind of starts to inform the etiology of inflammation and mood disorders, particularly in individuals who are more medically ill or in conditions of increased inflammation. And why this is kind of a whole body of platform for future research. We have a few ideas, things I'll put out there. One, TOSI does not cross the blood-brain barrier, so we may be seeing kind of a shifting in IL-6, although you can also argue that in the setting of kind of more acute illness, that blood-brain barrier is compromised to some degree, which may mean that some TOSI can cross. It may also have to do with kind of the timing of IL-6. So we don't know yet specifically if sort of increased levels are good to start and then maybe worse later. We also don't know about specific types of IL-6. There are cis and trans signaling. It may have more to do with that. And we also don't know if there's a kind of a acute protective effect. So there's quite a bit of more questions provoked than potentially answered by this data. The second point I want to bring up before concluding this talk is that I think this is really important as we think about cancer treatments, particularly in the setting of transplantation. As TOSI two years ago now was approved, it's only its second FDA approval for cytokine release syndrome. And this is cytokine release syndrome, or CRS, is one of the more common adverse reactions to chimeric antigen receptor or CAR T cell therapy. And it occurs in about 30 to 50% of patients. It has two approved treatments thus far, steroids and tocilizumab. And interestingly, when patients are given TOSI for CRS, their systemic symptoms all improve. However, their neurologic symptoms not only don't improve, but there is increasing data that they actually may be worse. And I think the data that we are finding is kind of supporting that. And I think as CL psychiatrists, we're going to need to pay attention to that, both in the acute setting, but I think as time comes, we may be seeing that this is kind of a major insult that is occurring to the brain, and we don't know yet what that will mean for further quality of life symptoms or psychiatric pathology as time goes on. So it's something I think we need to be aware of. We are starting to collect data on later outpatient reported outcomes as well to try to understand that better. So in conclusion, I hope I have convinced you that transplantation is a relevant and understudied population for PNI and translational biobehavioral oncology research. And I've tried to hit three main points. So one, how stress impacts transplant biology and outcomes. Two, that there are candidate interventions, and provided you some information about what propranolol that blocks that beta adrenergic pathway could do. And three, that transplant treatments also reciprocally impact CNS functions and what we need to kind of pay attention to as CL psychiatrists. But certainly there is additional work definitely needed in the field to continue to identify some of the most pertinent pathways, as well as, of course, subsequent effective interventions. So I'd like to just acknowledge all of my mentors and collaborators, the funding support to enable this work and research assistance involved. It really takes a whole team to do this type of research. And with that, I'm happy to conclude and take any questions, comments. I will do my best to see some of those on the screen. And Paul, I will rely on you to kind of help usher us through that. Thank you.
Very good. Well, thank you, Dr. Knight. That's terrific. You